I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast brought to you by SUSE. I'm at SUSE's offices in Morningside in Johannesburg today for what I know will be an interesting discussion with Grant Bennett, the country manager for South Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa at the Enterprise Open Software Specialist. Grant, welcome to the podcast, and thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you very much. Thanks for allowing me to have this chat with you.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I think many people know the SUSE name, probably in large part due to the company's history in developing open source operating system software based on Linux. But the company has morphed significantly over the years and has actually gone through a number of owners as well. Tell me a bit about the history of the company, the various ownership changes you've been through, and what its main focus areas are today.
Sure, absolutely, Duncan. Yeah, thank you so much. So in essence, SUSE has been around in the market for about 27 years now. German organization by origin. We discussed that earlier with regards to the name, how you pronounce it, and it is definitely SUSE. So that was a brilliant pronunciation. I know a lot of guys actually battle with that. But in essence, we've been in the open source community since inception, 27 years ago, as said. South African market, quite prevalent, been owned by Oil Novell, moved through to the Micro Focus purchase, and then recently, broken away and been bought by a private equity firm called EQT, which is one of the largest equity firms in Europe. So very, very exciting times. I think for the first time in history now is that SUSE is an independent organization, which allows us to be more visible, more out there, get the branding and the awareness out there where it wasn't in the past. You know, we were kind of, I would say, almost stifled by previous owners, you know, in that we weren't independent and able to drive our own agenda, you know?
You've had about five or six owners from what I've seen in my research. And, of course, we're sitting in the building today that was formerly occupied by Novell, which was one of your owners, as you mentioned, in the past. You've been owned by HP Enterprise at one point as well, I think?
No, that was a purchase that Micro Focus did. They purchased HPE globally and moved them into the business unit as such, but there was an attachmate component. It was owned by attachmate, then Micro Focus, etc. But I think the track record lastly was from a Micro Focus perspective ownership, and that's the most recent breakaway for us to become an independent organization.
Right. Okay. Now, you're quite well known, I think, especially in consumer techie circles for your OpenSUSE Linux distribution, and I've probably installed it at some point in the past, but that's by no means the company's main focus today, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's across the board from an enterprise perspective. It's actually amazing how many organizations don't know that actually running SUSE within the environments. If you look at the tier one and tier two space, we work prolifically with SAP, with Microsoft, which was a misnomer in the past, you know, in essence. We were the enemy. Linux, as an overall, was the enemy for Microsoft.
Cancer, I think Steve Ballmer called it, right?
Geez, you remember those days. You've got a good memory.
I'm old.
But no, I think we both are, Duncan. So, yeah, I do remember those days. But in essence now, I mean, the market's moved. They've understood that open source has its value. It has its high availability. It's intense security. It's innovation development by the community. So we coexist now. A lot of the times, working very, very closely together on various initiatives, in customers, etc., which is great.
And you guys play in the enterprise space. We know there's no money in selling open source Linux distributions. I mean, that software is free. It's under the GPL. It's people download it off the internet for free, but there is actually money to be made in open source software, and you guys are proving it. You focused on the enterprise market, supporting customers. Tell us a bit about what the company actually does today in terms of supporting customers and what it is you do when you approach a client.
100%. So in essence, what we do is the community develops these applications in Linux. SUSE hardens these applications and makes them enterprise and market ready. And the way we obviously make our money in that segment of the market is by support and services around that area through our partner base. We have an indirect model. SUSE does not sell directly to the market. We sell through a very, very strong partner base. And we coexist, you know, with the hyperscalers and our partners in order to develop these very hardened enterprise solutions.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And how long have you been in the South African market?
South African market, as you say, since Novell days, so since the inception, since all the way through, you know, from the Penguin, as you say, the Penguin days. So absolutely. Jeez, you've got a great memory, Duncan.
Yes, I used to be a Linux user, so I kind of have a feel for the software. Yeah.
It's great stuff. Mm. I mean, I used to work for Microsoft. So as you said, in the old Obama days, it was the enemy. But, I mean, they funded a lot of it in those days, you know, from a Linux open source perspective as well.
Yeah.
They had their own open source kind of drive. And it's just you can see the way the market has shifted in that you need coexistence. People don't want to be locked into proprietary, this is all you can use kind of domains. They want to be innovative. They want to understand how they can grow, you know, as opposed to being stifled. And I think that's what makes it so exciting from a SUSE perspective globally, not only from South Africa, but Sub-Saharan Africa perspective today.
And it's from a Microsoft perspective, it's no longer our way or the highway. It's you know, they're kind of embracing everything. Maybe in the past it was embrace and then extinguish, I think was the phrase that got used. But there's certainly been a change in focus by Microsoft under the leadership of Satya Nadella. Do you think it's been positive generally for the open source community?
I think it has. I think that they're not so focused on actually, as you said, you know, kind of consuming competitors.
Yeah.
They're looking at how they can coexist and work together. I think that's the way the entire market's going.
Yeah.
If you look across the board, it's how do we coexist? How do we, you know, give customers what they require, not necessarily what we box into a certain vanilla package, but how do we extend it out in order to make organizations competitive in their own right? You know, let us look after your IT, your information technology arena, and you focus on what your core business is.
And it's the shift to the cloud that I suppose has changed the imperative.
Absolutely, definitely. So it's allowed organizations to say, where do I want to spend my money? Where is it most valuable? What's going to get me my biggest return on investment? Is it infrastructure? Is it platform? Is it software? What could that be? You know, where can I save costs, you know, and spend them in perhaps R&D within the organizations in developing new innovative ways for them to go to market, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned the acquisition by EQT Partners. That was a $2.5 billion US dollar acquisition. They're a private equity player, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. What was behind that deal and what does EQT bring to the table?
So I think EQT brings a very, very strong record of, you know, investing in organizations and getting them to grow, either through purchasing other organizations or growing themselves, you know, with regards to increased market share and profitability. The nice thing about EQT is that they want to invest in the organization for growth as opposed to get into the organization to manage.
Mm-hmm.
So they're expecting each region, each divisional head to grow their business along the strategic charter and, you know, get it into a position of strength. Whatever happens, you know, post that, if we purchase additional organizations or perhaps in future we get sold off to some other organization, which hopefully doesn't happen. We remain the only open source, exactly. So actually currently, Duncan, we're actually the only open source enterprise vendor in the market today. So
what do you mean by that?
So in essence, that we're not owned by a proprietary organization, you know, like many of our competitors. I don't want to mention their names, give them any airtime, Duncan, but you know, a lot of those are being absorbed into your larger kind of proprietary models, which is kind of sad, I think, in that, you know, open source is what it should be, open development of the community developing and innovating around those product stacks as opposed to kind of, you know, boxing yourself in.
But it's turned out that there's and there were plenty of naysayers, I think back in the 90s and the noughties, who said that, you know, where's the business in open source? But there is big business and big money in open source. And in fact, a lot of the cloud is built on top of open source components, right?
Absolutely. And the reason for that is it's security, it's high availability, it's proven to be very trustworthy, reliable, and it runs. I mean, if you think that you've got an entire global community that has a vested interest to make this work and to better it, what better way when you've got the greatest minds in the world, you know, kind of investing their time and developing these product lines, then SUSE taking that down, hardening it, making the enterprise ready and where the money is, because I know that's where you're going with regards to the support and services around that arena. So absolutely, it's not proprietary software. It's software as a service in its true form. of the term, and organizations such as our partner base, etc., they make their money from a support perspective if they do first, second, third line support, if SUSE doesn't pick that up, or they do it on consulting and services arena, you know, is actually where you want it to be, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So a big capital injection from the private equity player, EQT. What will SUSE be using that capital injection to do?
So definitely for growth. So my understanding is that we want to be seen to be an organization that is taken seriously, you know, from an enterprise aspect across the world, in that we deliver enterprise-ready, you know, software solutions and go to market. So the investment is going to be in those two key areas.
Yep.
Either we're going to look at a player within the global market that we purchase in order to make SUSE's offering a lot more attractive and complementary to our customer base. An investment within growth within the organization, perhaps additional headcount, looking at other regions. If we look at sub-Saharan Africa, remains quite, you know, untouched, and that's across the board for many organizations. And there's a lot of developing countries that are realizing technology charters and drives to get their countries in line with global.
Yeah, and you you look after the sub-Saharan African region in addition to South Africa.
I do, yes.
What are some of the exciting markets outside of South Africa that you're seeing? Where is interest coming from?
So we're seeing amazingly Ghana. Ghana on their new innovation charter driven by government, saying, you know, we need to lead the way with regards to innovation. How do we take the country to the next level? So we're seeing quite a lot of adoption in that space. Traditionally, I'll be honest with you, I focused on Ghana before, and it was a very slow-moving country. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen a massive upswing. And Kenya, I mean, if you look at Kenya servicing the East Africa market, and you look at its availability of bandwidth, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're stronger than ours. I mean,
a number of undersea cables there.
Absolutely.
Teams and a couple of others that don't even come down to South Africa.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about connectivity, what a phenomenal place to be, you know. And they look at servicing a lot of the English-speaking countries that are, you know, close to them regionally. Obviously, there are the aspects of data leaving countries.
Yes.
You look at Microsoft, you look at them opening their data center here within South Africa. Great move. And from my understanding, they're also looking at, you know, East Africa. Perhaps Kenya could be the next move in order for them to focus on that region, which is where we want to be with. We want to be with our hyperscalers and with our partners such as SAP and Microsoft, AWS and Google. You know?
Right. Hmm? So let's turn the conversation now and talk a bit about SAP. SUSE is a big partner to the German software giant.
Yes.
And you've just returned from SAP's big partner conference at Sun City, which was last week, was it?
It was, yeah. Well, no, sorry, it was this week.
It was this week.
Yeah, okay. It was Monday to Wednesday.
Hot off the presses then.
Straight away.
How was it?
It was great. I mean, I think that if you look at the partners as well as the customers, because there was that lag. I mean, I think it was 2 years, 3 years since they did their last Sofila event. There was that hunger out there. They had a great turnout. From what I understand, they had 1,000 attendees,
wow.
Which was great. You saw customers' interest definitely around where SAP will be taking HANA by 2025, because that's on everyone's kind of radar.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of those discussions with our customers. And obviously, with us being, you know, the operating system of choice from a Linux perspective, open source perspective, is that we work very, very well together mm-hmm. in these arenas. So it was fantastic to be able to chat to customers about how we can, you know, work together and take them to the 2025
yeah.
model.
Yeah. Well, SAP HANA, for those who don't know what it is, it's an in-memory technology. Just take us through it and why it's important and why SAP has such a big focus on it.
Okay, so I think that's taking its customer base to the cloud. I think that if you look at in-memory computing, it's instantaneous. If you look at analytics, you're able to just run so much more processability mm-hmm. Within the chip as opposed to getting pulled out.
So this is about doing processing for your business applications, your database, etc., effectively in memory, in RAM, rather than on disk. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So it's significantly quicker.
phenomenally quicker. Mm. So instead of having to, you know, pull that information and analyze it in another application, you can do it on the fly.
Okay.
Which lends itself to instant information. So you can pick up on industry trends. You can do your analytics, understand where your market penetration needs to be, whatever that may be.
Whereas before you'd have to run a report and wait a period of time to get the results.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So it enables real-time business decisions.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Which makes it quite exciting, you know. And we're talking about masses of information. We're talking about terabytes and terabytes, you know, that can get analyzed in a sub-second kind of times, you know. So it's and that's what you want as a business, you know, first to market, first decision-making capabilities, always, you know, first to win kind of thing, you know. Yeah. And that's what you require.
So what is SUSE's role in SAP HANA?
So we would be the operating system of choice. Mm-hmm. So we sell a product called SLES for HANA, mm-hmm. which is SUSE Linux. Operating system that HANA sits on top of, whether it be hybrid cloud, which is public or private or whatever organizations choose to go, you know. So we would be that high availability platform that HANA sits on.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And public versus private versus hybrid, what are the discussions that are happening in corporate South Africa now around that?
So that is a very interesting question, Duncan, because from the inception, I mean, where people were saying, well, which route should I go? You know, is it going to be private? Is it going to be public? Am I looking at a hybrid? A lot of what happened in the past was a lot of education of people, a lot of education of the customers. Customers not knowing, you know, what to select, what would be good for their business. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen a shift within the market where customers are actually saying, well, we're not going to go completely private. We're not going to go completely public. We're going to go for a hybrid model, and we're going to see which suits us best, you know. Mm-hmm. If I have information which is critically key to my organization, do I want to put that out in the public cloud? Probably not. What I'd want to do is first put it in private, on-premise, work on it, you know, because it's key to my organization within, you know, the company, and then decide in future. So I'm seeing a very mixed model as opposed to we're just going to go private or we're just going to go public.
So they're putting some stuff in the public cloud, some stuff in the private cloud.
Absolutely.
And I presume over time they'll that mix will shift. Will it shift in favor of the public cloud over time?
So I don't know. That's the thing. It's also from a hyperscaler perspective. What we're noticing is that people are not going for a single hyperscaler vendor. They're choosing two or three. Mm. And they're saying, well, let me see the value I get out of these hyperscalers, whether it be AWS, Google, or Azure, Microsoft, and just see, you know, let me break pieces of those components off. Perhaps non-core goes to public, so maybe an HR kind of a cloud module, where it, say, for instance, if the cable goes down from a CCOM perspective. Mm. It's not critically key business from a public perspective. You can get that up and running in a couple of hours. It's not high availability. But if you look at a bank, you know, critical kind of business financial information, that can't go down. It has to be available 99.9% of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that lends itself to, you know, the SUSE high availability stack on HANA, yes. On SAP.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you say you work through partners. So you won't go into a client will you go into a client and assist them with
absolutely
their strategy around doing this sort of cloud stuff and which direction they should go in, or do you rely on your partners for that?
So no, we go in together. Okay. We work with our partners. So we have a joint initiative. We select certain customers where we do a joint strategy. Sometimes the partner is more involved with the customer. Mm. Sometimes we're more involved where we'll bring the partner in. But we will definitely advise. What we're finding, Duncan, is that customers are looking for the advisory role, the kind of what to do next, what is best for the company, as opposed to should I be going cloud.
Mm.
Customers know that they need to go cloud. They just need to be almost handheld and kind of informed and reassured that, say, for instance, this partner has done work in this space and there is referenceability. So we've moved to that level, as opposed to when it was in inception and introductory phase, it was more education of customers. Yeah. Now it's to say, well, look, we've done this in this specific area. This is an industry that's very similar to yours, and you can chat to that customer about it.
Yeah.
And this is the partner that did the delivery, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which is great. So you can see the market's shifted.
So what's driving that shift? What are the conversations that are happening?
So if you look at it from two different camps, if you look at IT, They're looking at it at a, well, how do we see, how do we get more effective within an organization and enterprise? If you look at it from a financials, from the FD's kind of camp, he's looking at it, where do I save costs? Mm. Where do I draw costs out of IT where I can spend them better within the business? From an IT perspective, it's how do I repurpose my people? So it's not the elimination of people for process, but almost getting those people more strategic in within the organization and getting them to drive more strategic processes.
And which industries in South Africa would you say are leading?
So far, quick to move. I mean, if we looked at the financial services sector, mm-hmm. they've been quite quick to move. If we look at also the telcos.
Which is maybe a bit surprising because they've got a lot of sensitive information. Right?
Exactly. They're mm-hmm. kind of, you know, we viewed them in the past as laggards, you know. Mm-hmm. The financial services guys wouldn't be the first to kind of move.
Yeah.
But they're seeing the value behind that. So they're looking at it. Banking needs to change. It can't be the same. You can't walk into a branch and go and do your kind of transactions with the teller anymore. Mm. How do we get more insightful on customers' information and data? How do we kind of sell to them as a person on the street,
yeah.
as opposed to the guy walking into a branch? So they've kind of shifted. And I mean, without mentioning obviously organizations' names, I mean, one of the largest banks in South Africa has already taken that step forward. Mm-hmm. And the announcement was made in all the media, which was, it's fantastic, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So you see that there is that appetite from traditionally that would have been a laggard and not first to market. Kind of the guys are moving there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the telco sector as well?
Absolutely. So if you look at our big telcos, you look at the largest, one of the largest ones in Africa, they made the decision to go full cloud across the board. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even go componentized. They made the call and said, we want to take this to cloud. Mm-hmm. And they moved that direction.
Yeah.
We having a lot of conversations with their competitors as well, in that they understand that they want to take these specific components, take them to the cloud, whether it be hybrid, public, private, and see what's, you know, most effective for them as an organization.
What's concerning them? What worries them about the shift to cloud? Are you getting some pushback and saying people saying, well, you know, should we really be putting our data here? Are there other factors that might be holding back the adoption of cloud in South Africa?
So I think in the past there were, you know, your POPIA Act, your GDPR kind of thing, where would the data reside? There was a lot of questioning about, you know, what do these acts and laws mean for me? Mm-hmm. So it's very specific per country. I think that people have moved past that now. I think they understand that whatever they do, it has to be done to the best and most stringent governance and compliance mm-hmm. Acts within those segments. So, no, I think that if we look at what customers' feedback to us is that they have a cloud strategy in place. They're moving ahead with the cloud strategy. They're just looking at what components of the business to do it in, as opposed to, hey, hold on, we're very unsure about this now. I think they've almost crossed that chasm.
There's no one who's saying, well, I'm just not going to do this.
No, no. So which is quite interesting. I mean, whereas right in the beginning, inception of cloud, there were guys like, bandwidth. What happens if the CECOM cable breaks? Then I don't have connectivity. Or what happens if, you know, I can't get connectivity to the data center? What has helped a lot is obviously Microsoft building a data center in South Africa and being able to provide that service. A lot of our partners, if you look at your, you know, your BCX Telecoms, your Dimension Data Brighthouse, they've been providing those services for a while now as well. So it's I think adoption's definitely going on the up and up.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges around moving to cloud is what it means for your people skills within the organization and reskilling, because you're going to need a different set of skills, right? And what does that mean for first of all, employment in South Africa? Is there going to be a reduction in the number of in the amount of IT skills required? And what do you do with your employees who've been trained and understand a certain skill set who suddenly are going to be expected to do something quite different?
So I think no. So I think that I don't think people are going to lose their jobs because of cloud. I think that they're going to get repurposed. I think their skill sets are going to move into different arenas. So we've certainly seen an upswing in demand for open source training and certification, which is great for us because the more people out there that are delivering absolutely hardens, you know, the applications within those organizations. I don't see a shift where people are going, I don't want to learn something new. I think that technical resources are by nature guys that want to understand, you know, and they want to progress their knowledge in those certain stacks. What I have seen, however, though, is that where you'd have a very strong technical kind of affiliation around a particular vendor, people are trying to cross-skill more.
Okay.
Which is great, you know, makes them more marketable. Their CVs look great, you know, as opposed to, say, for instance, being only one vendor specific kind of solution focused.
It must be a bit stressful, though, if you're at work in IT in one of these large organizations and the company makes a strategic decision that they're going to move in this particular direction, and suddenly you're thinking, well, do I have the skills that are going to be required to take this forward? What advice would you give to those sort of employees, and what should they be doing?
So what I've seen is the companies have been very proactive that have made these decisions on repurposing and re-educating and retraining people. So, I mean, we spoke about one of those large financial institutions that decided to go cloud. So they just haven't left their people to, like, kind of wither out there and, you know, die kind of thing.
Because they can't afford to, right?
No. I mean, these skills are going to be required. So it's not like Microsoft's not going to require those skills in their data center.
Yeah.
Their knowledge of financial services and their knowledge of, you know, the software in that space is certainly going to be a requirement till the end of time, you know, because in essence, you're going to need someone to be able to manage that segment. So I see that customers are investing and getting their guys to the next level so that they can either repurpose them within the organization, becoming more strategic, or getting them to look at other technologies, you know, and say, well, this is something that's coming down the line. And I mean, we've all heard the buzzwords, AI, blockchain, IoT, all those kind of things. So I think it's almost a reinvigoration of the segment in that it's exciting again. There's new things that have come to the fore and business is changing.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, there's one constant in the IT industry, and that's change, right?
Exactly. So you can never get bored, yeah, Duncan.
Much more exciting than being an accountant, I suppose. You look forward to a new accounting standard.
I love it. Exactly.
Grant, before I let you go, maybe just give us a rundown on where you see SUSE, particularly in the South African context and the sub-Saharan African context, for that matter, going over the next few years.
Okay, I'm very excited. I see it as very positive. I see very positive growth. I can definitely see the trend in customers actually calling us and engaging us more. I think you can see more branding out there, more brand awareness, more marketing, more visibility from a SUSE perspective, being an independent organization now. I think you're going to see a lot more joint interaction within organizations. You know, it's going to be almost a message of, SUSE is the Rolls-Royce operating system of choice, and organizations are going to want their businesses to run effectively, and that's what's going to happen across the board. And that's not only in South Africa. I mean, that's for Africa as well. I see the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, there is certainly a massive hunger for skills, for growth, for redevelopment in those segments, and they're certainly pulling us that way, Duncan, which is great.
Good stuff. Grant Bennett is Country Manager for South Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa at SUSE. I said it right. Thank you so much for your time and for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you so much, Duncan. Thank you for your time as well.